Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Today, we are attempting something a little ambitious.
Yeah, we're taking two completely different messages delivered by two very different speakers, and we're going to see if they actually fit together.
It does sound like a bit of a mismatch on paper, you know. On one side, we have Pastor Tim Travis doing a deep, almost philosophical breakdown of the book of Ecclesiastes.
Right. It's heavy on theology, history, and this idea of the whole duty of man.
And then on the other side,
we have a guest speaker, missionary Seham Each. And his message isn't really a lecture at all. It's a raw, boots-on-the-ground story about growing up Buddhist in Cambodia.
And planting churches where there were just, well, none before.
Exactly. But that's the beauty of this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission today is to connect the concept of duty, which Pastor Travis unpacks, with the application of desire.
Which is what we see so clearly in Seah's life.
Mm-hmm. We want to see how, you know, following the rules or fearing God actually transforms into this burning burden to save people.
Because I think for a lot of people, the word duty sounds like drudgery.
A chore list, yeah. But I think we'll see it's actually the fuel for something much more exciting.
Okay, so before we jump in, just a quick housekeeping note.
Right. These sermons are available on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. And you can always go to faithwayfbc.com for more information.
So let's start with the foundation. Pastor Tim Travis and his sermon, Advantage, Duty, and Balance.
He takes us straight to the end of the book of Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
And to really get this, you have to remember who wrote it.
Solomon.
The guy who had it all.
Had it all is a bit of an understatement. Pastor Travis reminds us he was the wisest and wealthiest man who ever lived.
It's not just that he was rich. He had absolute power. He had resources that make modern billionaires look like they're, you know, on a budget.
And let's not forget the personal life.
Oh, Pastor Travis mentioned the 700 wives.
He did. He joked it makes for a very complicated Valentine's Day.
A logistical nightmare, for sure. But the point isn't just the excess. It's that Solomon treated his life like a laboratory.
Yes. An experiment. He tested everything under the sun. Pleasure, architecture, knowledge, wealth, you name it.
He climbed every mountain, bought every toy, and his final conclusion.
Vanity. It's all smoke. None of it actually satisfies the soul.
Which leads us to the verses Pastor Travis focused on. Ecclesiastes 12.3, 10, and 14. Solomon just drops the mic with this.
Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for mm-hmm. this is the whole duty of man.
The whole duty of man. That sounds so final. But Pastor Travis makes a distinction here that I thought was just brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He compares our duty now to Adam's duty way back in the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not the same thing.
No, and this is so crucial for understanding our purpose today. Adam's original mandate was dominion.
Right. He was supposed to subdue the earth, keep the garden, rule over creation.
But Adam failed. He sinned. And in doing so, he basically handed the keys of dominion over to the enemy.
So Pastor Travis says that if we try to live by that dominion mandate today, if we think our job is to build a perfect kingdom here on earth,
we're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah.
We aren't here to rule the world anymore. Pastor Travis calls our new duty search and rescue.
I love that framing. Search and rescue. It just changes the entire vibe of the Christian life.
It does. I mean, think about it. If you are in a condemned building that's on fire, your duty is not to redecorate the lobby.
You're not worrying about the paint color or fixing the plumbing.
No. Your only duty is to get people out. That is the shift from dominion to reconciliation.
That brings a real sense of urgency to it. But to be effective at search and rescue, Solomon says we have to start with fearing God.
Hmm.
And honestly, fear is a tough sell in modern culture.
Mm-hmm.
We want a life coach God or a best friend God. We don't really like the idea of being afraid.
It's definitely a branding problem for the modern mind, you know. But Pastor Travis doesn't soften the definition. He says fear is an agitated feeling.
It's a deep, reverential awe or even dread. It's realizing you are small and God is massive.
But here is where it gets really interesting.
Right.
What he called the anxiety paradox.
Yes. The idea that fearing God actually delivers you from all other fears.
It's a hierarchy of fear. If you're standing in a cage with a lion, you are not worried about a mosquito buzzing in your ear.
The greater fear just swallows up the lesser fears.
And Pastor Travis used some great examples to illustrate this. Did you catch the one about the skyscraper climber?
Oh, the free soloist. Yeah. This guy climbing a skyscraper with no ropes, just a little bag of chalk, waving at a drone.
Yeah.
Pastor Travis was like, nope. No, thank you.
But then he compared it to getting on a Ferris wheel at a sketchy county fair.
Right, where you look at the mechanism and realize your entire life depends on two little cotter pins holding the seat together.
And the operator looks like he hasn't slept in about 3 days.
Exactly. The point is, we have all these natural fears. Fear of falling, phobias, spiders. Pastor Travis mentioned there's even a phobia of chairs.
Apparently so. But the theological anchor here is that if you fear God, the one who has power over eternity, you don't have to fear man.
You don't have to fear death.
And you don't have to be paralyzed by the chaos of the world. He quoted Psalm 34.7, "The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them."
So the fear of God isn't a trap. It's a safety net. It brings strong confidence, and it's the beginning of wisdom.
And that confidence is exactly what we need to pivot to our second source.
Mm.
Because it's one thing to hear a pastor in America explain the fear of God from a safe pulpit. It is an entirely different thing to see it lived out in a village in Cambodia,
where fearing God might literally cost you your family.
Right. This is where we bring in Seham H. He's a missionary to his own people in Cambodia. And his story is, well, wow.
Talk about search and rescue in real time.
Seha's background is just fascinating. He grew up in a village about an hour and a half from the capital, Phnom Penh.
And his family was Buddhist. Not just casually either. They were very, very devout.
And he had never heard the gospel. Didn't even know what a church was.
I loved how he got invited to church, though. It wasn't some theological debate or a tract that got him. His friends just said, come for soccer and food.
The universal language of teenage boys everywhere. We have a ball and snacks.
It works every time. But eventually, the message got through. He realized that the Buddhist teaching of doing good just wasn't enough.
Because he knew his own heart. He knew he wasn't good enough.
And he got saved on September 9, 2012. He remembers the exact date.
But this is where that fear of God versus fear of man collision happens.
Yes.
In the West, if a teenager becomes a Christian, his parents might think it's just a phase. In Seha's culture, and especially in his family, converting to Christianity was seen as a betrayal.
A betrayal of their ancestors.
Right.
His parents fed monks every single day. They worshipped idols.
So when Seha stopped giving money to the monks and stopped worshipping the ancestors, his parents were furious.
And they didn't just ground him. They put up a spiritual blockade. They banned him from church, banned him from reading the Bible, banned him from praying.
He's a teenager living under their roof. This is a huge dilemma.
Solomon says, fear God and keep his commandments. One of those is to know the word, but his earthly authority is saying no.
So tell us about the restroom detail, because this is the kind of thing you'd see in a movie.
It really is. Okay. So Seha's mom ran a business selling sugarcane juice out in front of the house.
Okay.
Seha had figured out her rhythm. When a customer came and his mom went outside to serve them, he would dive under his bed.
Where he kept his Bible hidden.
Exactly. He'd grab the Bible, run to the restroom, lock the door, and just read in secret for a few minutes until the customer left. Then he'd hide it again.
That is dedication.
Now think about the motivation there. That perfectly illustrates Pastor Travis's point.
Mm-hmm.
Seha feared God. He feared disobeying the command to know him more than he feared getting caught by his mother. He needed that word.
And that obedience in the dark, in the secret places, it eventually grew into a public ministry.
Which brings us to the core text Seha preached on, Romans 10.1.
Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved.
This is the desire part of our equation. Seha had this moment, he called it his calling to ministry, that just completely broke him.
He was on a mission trip near the Thai border in 2018.
Just checking things out, really. But he sees this little girl sitting all alone at a waterfall.
And he asks her, who are you waiting for?
And she says, I'm waiting for my dad to come back.
Wow.
And that one word, waiting, it hit him like a physical blow. He realized that just like that little girl, his entire country, his village, his family, they were all waiting.
Waiting for someone to tell them the truth.
He said he wept all the way from the waterfall back to his hotel. He went from being a single guy just checking out ministry to saying, Lord, send me.
And what I love about Seha's teaching here is how he applies Romans 10.1. Paul is writing about Israel, you know, his own people. Seha says, take a pen and underline Israel. Now cross it out and write my family, write my village. Write my neighbors.
It's about personalizing that burden. It's not just a theological concept anymore. It's your mom. It's your dad. And for Seha, that was the hardest battlefield.
And that connects right back to Pastor Travis's sermon on spiritual warfare.
It does.
Travis made the point that keeping commandments isn't just about behavior. It involves engaging the enemy. He quoted 1 Peter 5.8 that Satan is a roaring lion.
And he used that great analogy of the fixed game.
Yes. This is such a brilliant way to look at spiritual warfare. Imagine you were playing in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But someone from the future comes to you before the game and guarantees 100% certainty that your team wins by 20 points. How would you play?
You'd be loose. You wouldn't stress if you fumbled. You wouldn't panic if the other team scored.
You would just play your heart out because you know the result is secured.
Exactly. Pastor Travis says we are in a fixed game. Jesus already won on the cross. But the enemy still tries to intimidate us.
And Seha experienced this firsthand with his own family. He had to play the game knowing the outcome, even when it looked like he was losing.
This part of the story gave me chills. So Seha is married now. They have a baby, Ryan. And the baby has health issues at birth. It's a crisis.
It is. And usually a crisis like that would drive a Buddhist family back to the idols for help. But watch what happens.
The church, Seha's spiritual family, they stepped in. They didn't preach at his mom. They just showed her this overwhelming love and support during that terrifying time.
And that love cracked the door open. Her heart began to soften. She converted.
And eventually his dad converted too.
But the climax of this victory isn't just them praying a prayer. It's the burning of the altars.
We have to explain this for Western listeners. This isn't just, you know, throwing away some old books.
No. In that context, the ancestor shelf or the spirit house is the spiritual center of the home. It's where you offer food to the dead.
Getting rid of it is terrifying for a Buddhist. You're risking the wrath of the spirits.
And you are inviting the mockery of the entire village.
Seha even warned his mom. He said, "Mom, if we do this, the neighbors are going to mock you. You might lose friends." He wanted her to count the cost.
And her response, "I'm ready."
I'm ready. And then Seha describes taking those altars out to the fire. And he admits he didn't just place them in the flames.
What do you do?
He kicked one of them into the fire. He said he felt such joy.
That is the sound of chains breaking. That is the search and rescue mission accomplished in his own living room.
It's the ultimate expression of freedom. He replaced the fear of spirits and the fear of man with the fear of the one true God.
And because he feared God, he was free.
It's incredible. But Seha was also really honest about how hard it is to witness to your own family. He said soul winning with strangers is easy.
Right. You knock on a door. They say no. You walk away. No big deal.
But family, as he put it, they know your mess. They know who you were before you were saved.
They saw you grow up. It's much harder to have credibility there.
Yet that is exactly where he is planting his church. He's going back to his home village. 15,000 people.
And before this, zero gospel churches.
Zero. Think about that. 15,000 people living and dying without ever hearing the name of Jesus. That's why the search and rescue mindset is so vital.
It's not just a nice idea. It's a matter of life and death.
And it brings us right back to Pastor Travis's closing arguments. He reminded us that God's commandments are not grievous. They aren't burdensome.
Right. When Jesus sent the disciples out in Luke 9, he didn't just say, "Good luck, try hard." He gave them power and authority.
He empowered the duty he assigned.
So when Seha went back to that village, he wasn't going alone. He was going with the authority of the king.
So when we look at these two messages together, we see the full picture. The whole duty of man is to fear God.
And when you fear God, you stop fearing the social consequences of sharing your faith.
And when you stop fearing man, you gain this right heart's desire to see them saved, just like Seha did at the waterfall.
Duty fuels desire, and desire fulfills duty. They aren't opposites. They are two sides of the same coin.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we are left with two very specific challenges from these speakers. I want to make sure we don't miss these because they are really practical.
The first comes for Pastor Travis. And it's a challenge to the skeptic or, you know, maybe the believer who has gotten lazy with their Bible reading, he said.
Read the Bible through at least once in your life.
And the logic was undeniable. He told that skeptic, if it's not true, you lost nothing. You read a big old book.
But if it is true and you ignore it, you lose everything. You gain everything by engaging with it.
It's a challenge to intellectual honesty. Don't reject what you haven't examined.
And the second challenge comes from Seha Meech. And this one hits the heart. He asked us to write down a name.
One name. A family member, a neighbor, someone close to you.
And his specific vision was about the empty chair. He said to look at the empty seat next to you in church. Who are you waiting for? Just like that little girl was waiting for her dad, who's waiting for you to tell them.
That's the question that lingers, isn't it? We can talk about Solomon's wealth or Cambodian culture, but ultimately it comes down to your empty chair.
Who are you willing to fear God enough to go rescue? That is the thought I want to leave you with today.
It's a powerful place to end.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sermons of Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church. We hope this challenged you as much as it challenged us. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye.